And what do they finally pull? This language is wonderful stuff. What do they finally do to someone who thinks he is outside law? They convict him, don't they? And when he goes to jail, he gets a conviction. And he is a convict. He's been convinced. That's their method of conviction, is to contract time and space. They're trying to make an object. An object is all that is convincing. Now, when you walk up to this wall and hit your hand against it like this, you see, you're convinced it's there because you can feel the solidity of it. And if you didn't feel the solidity of it, you wouldn't be convinced it's there. So when you start doing unmocking, hold your hat, because mock-ups of one's own universe and unmocking the real universe, laughingly called, produce some singular results. Auditor telling me last night he'd had guy unmock apart a pinhole of the back of his head, move this pinhole back and forth, a hole back there, and make it a little bit bigger and a little bit bigger, and the guy was finally sitting there looking at the chair back. I heard this story a little earlier. The fellow said, I seem to be in this forest. And then the forest turned out to be the green back of the chair. He's looking out through the back of his head at the back of the chair. That's unmocking the back of the head. Well, the second you start to unmock all of a preclear's experience on the track, tells him, no, 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 it exists. It exists. Look, be convinced. Please be convinced. We'll do anything if you'll just be convinced. And he really gets scared that if he thoroughly unmocks a table or unmocks a chair, you don't have to educate him what to think about this. He'll say, maybe I better not do it. And you say, why not? Well, I don't know. I just got a feeling. Maybe I better not do it. And the next thing you know, don't be surprised if hard, solid objects and all sorts of things seem to sort of hail in on him. That's all the times when somebody backed him up against the wall and said, there's a green toad there, isn't there? He finally became convinced. Now, his immediate and foremost desire, of course, centered on the home universe. And the home universe might have merged over into this one. So his active desire was directed toward the home universe and then became crossed over into this universe. And many people have never discovered that there was any transition. They still think this is their universe. Once in a while, they'll run around, they'll talk about everybody being their puppets, and everybody looks like they haven't discovered yet that it's a group action. They think they made everybody here. And that's just an inability to differentiate between universes, their own universe and somebody else's. Well, they can start to unmock this universe and rebuild their own. They get cured of this very fast. But they will start breaking convictions they have had in the past. And when they start breaking these convictions, one after the other, why, these convictions are mostly driven in and upheld by force, and they themselves have tried to drive in and make other people convinced by using force. All this gets to be gorgeous after a while. You start to unmock and mock things up after a while, unmocking particularly, he'll run head on sooner or later into a feeling like he'd better not do it. What if it all? Because it's on the thinnest of gradient scales of agreement. One of the things you do is to make him go through the action of convincing somebody that something is solid. Make him pick up some empty space and convince somebody that something is solid about it. And he'll get the weirdest sensations. See, the joke is he's done just that. That's the essence of making a gimme gahoojit. You're going to have a game, and you have to agree with somebody and so on. And after a while, if you've got a lot of solid objects on which somebody's agreed, you come and hit him over the head with it. So behind every conviction lies a little pool of treachery. And don't be surprised then if you, as you unmock and mock things up in your preclear, or if you look on the assessment, you will find that there's a big charge on treachery. trickery, being stabbed in the back, and so forth. This table is treachery, trickery, and being stabbed in the back in some category, and is desire in another category. And it's all at once. Desire, trickery, treachery. Because there's nothing there to be desired, but he wants something there so that he can desire it. And it's trickery and treachery. And boy, has he got an educated perception level. You start to break through that educated perception level, he just does wonderful things. Then you'll run this for a little while, and you'll start getting charges on the e-meter on it wasn't there. He'll start going down. Don't worry about this. Just keep up the process. He's walked downstairs, and he started to walk out through the front door. And got his hand through the door right before he remembered he'd better take the doorknob. That's upsetting. Upsetting, for instance, come over here and pick up this Coke bottle and really have to make a little postule about it. Well, it's going to be solid and I can pick it up. Otherwise, your fingers close on each other. Fascinating. Well, don't let your pre-clear get into that state. We want this universe to check. You're going to run slam-bang into these manifestations. Now, what's wrong with your pre-clear? His little kitty tried to convince people of this and that. In school, everybody tried to convince him of this and that, and he's been trying to convince other people of this, and they've been trying to convince him of this. If you're just to run conviction and just tear it off. Now, if you start running around trying to convince people Scientology works, you're walking into the biggest trap of all. Of course Scientology works. It doesn't have to convince them. The reason it works, by the way, I didn't a gag very clear last night. I'd pop anybody who kept talking about my ideas on this subject, because what we're talking about is the anatomy of the physical universe. And I damned if this physical universe was my idea. So, if you were a little bit shocked or missed the point on that, I hope I made that very clear. And what you're doing is accusing me, you see, of being the author of all this universe. That's no good. Now, you can do a better job any day in the week. I mean, it's, look at that reverse flow as a trap. I agree, therefore I've got to have. But if I agree, if I agree to have, then I run into can't have. That on which I work hardest, I will have. Energy devoted to becomes havingness. So Lord help somebody who insists on working only on the insane. Obviously, he'd go nuts. It's inevitable. What he devotes energy to, he will have. That's one of the most fundamental rules there is. In order to have, you have to devote energy to something, too. This universe has got that all nailed down. That, by the way, doesn't happen to be entirely true. You can just upset the agreement level and do that. Now, to tell you the truth, before I did very much about this convincing and conviction and all that sort of thing, I was very careful about it. I was quite careful about it, because I actually, you start working with this and you just feel these walls kind of go creak. You say, now, wait a minute. That wasn't until very recently that I was thoroughly enough convinced that it would take more than two or three people working hard in this direction to cave it all in suddenly. But the whole thing of the process of spaceation, good old spaceation, done, you put out anchor points. Now let's put out anchor points while you're lying on the couch, and let's unlock the couch. In other words, put out anchor points and put something of your own creation below the couch, but inside your own space. Put out anchor points out here. You're lying on the couch. And put a mock-up of your own down there, and then unmock everything else but the beingness of you, the anchor points in that mock-up. In other words, unmock the real universe. What's the cure if your pre-clear suddenly, all of a sudden, decides his head's going to be blown off? Or this is liable to happen if you do that, you see. Oh, you just unmock some more things. Just unmock some more. You see, the essence of unmocking is that if he's really practiced at unmocking things, even if he's still in his head, one day he unmocks his body. And for him, You see, his unmarking is done carefully with his own frame of reference. He doesn't unmark for other people. He's kind of careful about that at first, and then he gets a little less careful. And so, of course, unmarking leads to a fellow just sitting there and no body. He doesn't feel any body. Naturally, then he can move around. And he actually will move around on that unmarking. He's quite unwilling to do this. But what's he run into? He runs into having to be convinced there is a body there. And he thinks of all the hard times that he's had trying to convince himself of the existence of something. He's been up to, way back sometime having this. He's tried to convince himself something doesn't exist. And something does exist, and he's tried to convince himself and get himself sold on the idea that there is a universe there. And he thinks of the times when his want has been stirred up, his interest has been commanded to this degree that he wants the object which has been described. And then he sits there, and his desire makes him want the solidity, and he gets space to come in together. And he thinks all the trouble he's been to, he got all this sort of thing, and to convince himself, and the thankfulness he felt when somebody walked up to him and handed him a real object, handed him a piece of the messed universe. He didn't know the rules by which you made something, but yet this other was real because he could be convinced by it. And how could he be convinced? Because it could hurt him, and because it could give him interest and pleasure, and because it had color in it, and all that sort of thing. So as your preclear starts on this track, he's liable to put on the brakes. But that is very aberrated, because you see, at any moment you can remark it. The essence of mock-ups is the essence of perceiving illusions. And when he perceives mock-ups better, he perceives this universe better. So all that becomes very simple. There is a level of abstraction which is at the upper spectrum of all abstractions. When the mathematician says, A equals alpha, or something, he does it with a conviction. He has decided that there is a convincing actuality in that relationship. And the reason he can say that is preceded by not mathematics, but a conviction or convincing of the existence of a beingness. And before beingness, there must be a convincedness about beingness. And your lowest level of abstraction, of course, is easily solved, because that's forget and remember. Now, don't forget those two, because the preclear's memory is as good as he can receive and retain objects, and it is as useful as and as workable as he can give away and let go of objects. And between these two things, then, you get the whole range of what is laughingly called the abstract. Now, objects, then, positioned in space, increased, decreased, made to disappear, made to appear again, and so on, are handling from a level of Q1 the entire span of abstraction as it applies to this universe. And let no one kid you otherwise. Mathematics are symbolical manifestations of number, quantity, and quality, and applied to this universe. You go outside the universe, make up a mathematics, 1 = 8. And then don't ever worry about proving it, because that's the next thing that people ask you, to knock you downscale and make you buy things or make you give up things. You've got to prove it. Of course, you can't prove something that isn't there. So a man goes into the doggondest, most long-winded dissertations and most idiotically logical, wholly absurd. Well, just get this. The reason why you work is you can eat. Nothing more logical than that, is there? That's real hard rock stuff. Now, just a minute. If you weren't so convinced it was work, you would probably eat better. Right. We've knocked that out just a little bit. Now let's go up along the line. What you eating for? Well, you're eating for the sensation. Well, if you could mark up flavors which were better than you could buy, you certainly wouldn't bother with what was called real stuff, would you? So therefore, you wouldn't be eating for the sensation. Let's go over into some better reason for this. Now, let's see. Fellow's in a body so he can be identified. Oh, you mean you can't make an identification of yourself show up so that people can see this? It's coming down to an inability of some sort here. Come on, let's prove why you have to work. Well, I have to work to have to... Well. And that is the way with any proof there is for anything, proof or proof in this universe. It just goes around in the squirrel cage. It's just nonsense. That's true of space, energy, and time, you see. I mean, they had space, energy, and time, each one evaluated in the terms of the other two, and nobody outside this rat race. So if we could never get outside this rat race, we could never find anything that would solve time. We move over here to be, do, and have, and we move back here and look at, what do we say, to heck with that, we're out of that rat race. Well, we've just consistently moved up the line, and we've moved the product of be, have, and do, is space, energy, and time. All right? Be, have, and do are conditions which can be set up by postulates, which then, if everyone is convinced thoroughly enough, exist as space, energy, and time. And you work from this upper abstraction of be, do, and have, and you get space, energy, and time, but you get something else, too. You don't just get space, energy, and time. You find out that postulates can be made about almost anything. Now, the first time the postulates start to get very set and matter begins to be unmovable and people begin to be very unhappy and the game stops being a game and becomes very, very hard work is when everybody has to prove it all the time. They're proving something that isn't true no matter what they're trying to prove. Now, we've taken apart an anatomy here, an anatomy of many levels of conviction, which have resulted in many levels of desires and enforcements and inhibitions, resulted in many levels of conviction, many levels then of affinity and agreement and communications. And what we've done is, in the language of this, backtracked right on up the line until we had reconstructed this and we followed the track back and all of a sudden we test it. Now we can go up that track or down that track again or get off that track and go over on some other track and do something about that. And it's up to you to establish a reality along this level. But this is awfully tight as a level of application. I mean, you're not very far off any grooves. You've got postulates. You've got Q1. And then you've got postulates. And then you've got be, do, and have. And that gives you start, change, and stop, space, energy, time. Therefore, it can give you any kind of an abstraction, so-called. It can give you any kind of an object or any kind of a condition. You've just got all of that. Is neatly fitted together in sort of a little telescope. You can pull it out and look at it lengthily and drag it out endlessly or simply snap it together real close and start asking about the highest level of abstractions you can. You do an assessment on this E-meter here. You look that over. You find out what he can't do. Well, the essential things that he can't do is can't unconvince himself once he's convinced. You might say that would be one of the rougher aberrations. He can't convince himself that he can be unconvinced because he thinks he has to convince himself to be unconvinced. Of course, every time he convinces himself that he has to be unconvinced, he becomes more convinced and lower on the scale because of your reverse vectors and other things. So I want to see assessments done, but certainly not with, you know, before you start work on the pre-clear, fill up maybe 10 notebooks, exhausting all this out carefully. Now, if you continue to run a pre-clear on the machine while you do this, you will see whenever he's run up against one of these blocked convictions, he's hit a point where he feels he has to be convinced. When you run up against one of those, it'll give you quite a shock on the pre-clear. That is to say, he's run up against a point where he feels, oh boy, he just dials down on that. Where if he gives this one up, the whole universe will go boom. And he'll get quite upset about it. But I'll read you a couple little laws about conviction, by the way. Trying to convince is the same as trying to move people around, people or objects around, that they are solid or not solid, that they have space, that they don't have space, that they act, that they don't act, that they are perceived, that they are not perceived, that they can perceive, that they can't perceive. That's all. Total level of lineups. And one of the rougher things is that empty space is solid. Try to convince somebody empty space is solid. You get the big relief of somebody, let's say you're dropping somebody out of a 16-story window or something like that. Think of the big relief he would feel if he had a solid thing put immediately under him. So that he would just stop a couple of feet and touch this solid thing. Boy, he'd feel so relieved. Well, that's pay for being convinced that a solid thing can keep you from falling. It doesn't happen to mean that a solid object can keep you from falling, or it doesn't happen to mean that gravity can necessarily act on you. This gets very, very interesting after a while. You could throw, quote, solid objects around at quite a rate if you wanted to. It's up to you to recover that. It's not up to you to be shown. And also, when you've recovered it, it isn't up to you to show anybody that. It isn't. It isn't up to anybody to. You don't have to demonstrate anything to anybody. Matter of fact, I make a very set rule against it. To hell with it. Somebody comes up to me and says, can you prove it's so and so and so and so? It's just, that's been going on in this track for 74 trillion years. Would you please prove to me that so and so and so and so? To prove it to me. But I can't see the reason in it. Both of those things are just as haywire as hell. There is no reason in it. And as far as proving it is concerned, they want to be convinced, and the fastest way to convince anybody would be to shoot him or something. And that's real conviction. Yeah. What's also amusing is trying to convince people that particles have various qualities and that they're visible or invisible. It becomes very fascinating to try to demonstrate to somebody, really prove it to him that a particle exists. You can imagine yourself early on the track going into heated discussions about this thing until the guy finally would groggily say, okay, that's a particle. I'm convinced. After a while, we get all these particles together and you say, see that table? It's been solid. Now look, I'm going to prove to you that that table is solid. Now, take your fist. You say, I haven't got a fist. You haven't got a fist. Well, now look, let's take a particle there. Now hold on to the particle. You got the particle? Now hit it against this table, see? The guy goes, something there. Not really too solid yet, though. And you say, well, just a minute. Whap, bam, it's solid. Okay, now you get it right there. Yeah, nice and solid now. I mean, it's just as idiotic as that. The guy isn't convinced, so you convince him. He's already been convinced there's such a thing as energy, so he can be zapped. He's convinced of that. And now that he's convinced there could be energy, you can convince him there's such a thing as a particle, and the energy's got to have space to be in, isn't there? Of course, energy's got to have space to be in, naturally. How could there be any energy if there wasn't any space for it to be in? So that's space, isn't it? Okay. Guess that's proved. All right, now if there's space and there's energy in it, you don't want that energy in motion all the time. It's silly to postulate that it keeps changing position in space. You haven't proved to him yet that it is changing position in space, see? Now you just move over in the corner. Now, when it gets over there in the corner, it gets solid, doesn't it? It's not moving. So, what do you know? It's not moving. Well, when it's not moving, it gets solid. There it is. Solid object. That will be a dollar. If somebody's already worked the magic on you, a dollar or a pound are worth having. That you can buy things with it that you can't manufacture. The only thing valuable about the whole thing was a piece of knowledge. If you know a modus operandi and can put it into effect without excessive labor or cost, you sure don't need the object from somebody else, do you? So it was knowledge, actually, in essence, that was above all the levels. Now, you will find that knowledge is something that most of your pre-clears will just shudder about destroying. They don't want to, unless it's knowledge about themselves. So, you give them mock-up police dossiers that tell about all their affairs and everything else, and you get that blown up and so on, because they've got to take the terrible value level they have off knowledge. Because if they have translated the word knowledge as meaning a fact, then they have to hold on to their facsimiles. So they feel they can't destroy their facsimiles because their facsimiles are knowledge. And this is not true. Their facsimiles as records are of no great value. Present time action is of greater value. The knowledge of how to get it accomplished or how to accomplish present time action is valuable, not the file in which the knowledge is contained. The invaluableness of a file does not consist of the quality of its file cards. And if the file could exist without file cards, throw it away. Keep the knowledge, get rid of the file cards. Knowledge can exist if we have a very easy, good method of reworking it at any time. You don't need it. You'll see that happening the moment that you suddenly realize that you are sitting with a formula which produces knowledge at will. The guy says, well, I know. What the hell with these facsimiles? He's convinced, too, that facsimiles are used in lieu of force. This is a horrible trap. He thinks that knowledge will always serve in lieu of force. Well, it will if you can get there with enough of it. But don't try levels of esoteric communication when there's a soldier on the battlefield and he's got the rifle trained square on you and the finger is closing on the trigger. That is exactly the wrong moment to try to inform him that you know more about rifles than he does, so therefore you should be able to... Oh, no. No. You're going to lose your havingness right there. Another thing is over-evaluation of havingness. A person who over-evaluates havingness consistently and continually, then he will begin to protect things that he's better off without. He will have things he doesn't need because he feels he can't ever replace them. And you get your pack rat nature of man. And he goes below that level. He feels that other people want to damage him solely because he has things. Therefore, he'll start to abandon. He has no proper evaluation of the importance of having this, which means automatically then he'd have no proper evaluation of time, which he doesn't have. But it all starts out with a desire and a conviction and goes on down the line. And after a person's been convicted in certain 74 trillion years, in the messed universe, that much havingness of the messed universe, it's time for somebody to bail him out. I'll talk to you later this evening.